Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor Kesem and Diana Kelly. We live in a cyberspace almost all the time, but do we know enough about living in it securely? Join this dynamic duo as they take you through an exploration of daily cyber activities and how you can make better choices to make them secure for yourself and your family. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome to Your Everyday Cyber. I'm Limor Kesem, a cybersecurity professional and advisor to some of the largest corporations in the world. Also, one toddler's mom. My co-host is Diana Kelly, a cybersecurity expert who is the CTO and co-founder of Security Curve. Now, Your Everyday Cyber is a podcast we created to bring information security and privacy to people everywhere and of all walks of life, not just professionals that we interact with on a daily basis. And we've been having an amazing time talking to those professionals that we knew from across the industry that come on the show to tell us about risks to either everyday technology that we use or the things we love doing online, like shopping and playing and meeting people, and just helping them do these things with more awareness and more securely. But unlike the usual episode, today's episode does not feature an awesome guest. It's just us two special women here doing our special Ask Us Anything episode that we crafted especially for you, our listeners. And it makes us even more excited about it to chat to you on what we got from you over the past month in terms of questions that you sent in.
Yeah, it's so true, Limor. We created this podcast because we really wanted to help everyone, you know, everybody with their everyday cyber concerns. So it was just so wonderful to hear what listeners were interested in. It was really fun to have that interaction. We got a lot of great questions and we had some fun ones in. Our friend Adam Shostak pulled out an excellent Monty Python and the Holy Grail reference with the question, what is the airspeed velocity of a European swallow? But, you know, it was kind of fun because podcasts can feel a little bit, you know, you're separated from your audience when you're doing the podcast. So it was just so fun to be able to be interacting with the audience as we were preparing for this episode. And to encourage them, we did offer a $50 Amazon gift certificate. If you submitted a question, it is here in the bowl for the drawing at the end of the podcast. And we will say the first name so that, you know, that they won. If you submitted a question, even if you do not hear your question read on this episode, because we do have a lot of questions to get through, be assured your name's in the bowl and you'll be part of the drawing.
Yeah, good stuff. And we have quite a few questions. I'm not sure we can get to all of them this time, but if we don't, we're going to go and do a second episode on Ask Us Anything. So you'll also have a chance to put in more questions. And we're going to start in the order of the questions received.
Yeah. So the first one is really, it's a perfect one for you, Limor, which is because you do so much work in this area, is how do you find guests for the podcast?
Aha. We actually have an editorial calendar of subjects that we put on our podcast page and kind of go through stuff. We might go by, let's say, a most relevant theme. Maybe it's something that came up in the news, like current events. But if not, it could be seasonal themes, maybe holidays. And we look, you know, for the things that are going to be most interesting to people at a given time and then seek out experts from those domains to come talk to us about those. You know, could be, let's say, for Thanksgiving, we did, you know, the connected kitchen, just as an example. So I have another question that we got here. You're both very technical. Why did you decide to focus on the everyday consumer?
Yeah, you know, that is a wonderful question. And it's because we really wanted to help change the conversation that the world has about cybersecurity. And back when Limor and I were both at IBM together, at one point, I forget who, but somebody who worked on the blog with us, the security intelligence blog, said, no more hacker in hoodie pictures, you know, which is essentially, let's change even the iconography. We talk about hackers in this very scary, very dark way. And then that makes people scared of technology. And technology is so wonderful and is making so many advances in healthcare and driving and how we live our lives. And so we wanted to help people understand that, well, yes, there are cyber criminals out there. I mean, we can't sugarcoat it. There are cyber criminals doing bad things all the time. It doesn't mean that you as the consumer have no power, that and education and knowledge are power. So we really wanted to have this conversation to give people who use technology an understanding of what's going on so that they could take action and be able to actually help to protect themselves without fear. So seems like, though, that hacking is a really big thing nowadays. So Lamour, the next question is, what's your favorite part about being in cybersecurity?
Being in cybersecurity, I get a lot of questions about that from people who don't know me and for people who do know me. And I would say two things. The first thing is cyber. Let's say it's not all about hacking. There's so much to do there. And my actual reply is that, you know, cybersecurity has a plethora of different roles, both, you know, technical stuff, non-technical roles. It has so much room for so many skills from other professions, people coming in from other professions. And hacking in itself is a small part of what goes into operating, let's say, a security team or security program overall. What I really love is the diversity of roles and the ability to keep learning all the time. Those are two of my favorite aspects of this profession. And the next question is for you, Diana. Actually, it's a good one. Did Diana's dog, Nora, learn to speak with buttons?
Yay, a Nora question. So she did, which is pretty exciting. But we started her as an adult dog. So her brain doesn't have the neuroplasticity of a puppy brain. So we never expected her to become the very complex conversationalist, like the well-known Instagram dogs that are speaking with buttons like Bunny and Stella. But she has learned and does use every day, multiple times a day, sometimes too many, a button to ask to go inside, to go outside. And then she has a button on the other side of the door. It's the doggy doorbell. And she tells us when she wants to be let in. And she's also learned with buttons about snuggles and kisses. So she can tell us if she wants to be snuggled or she wants to be kissed or she just wants to be left alone. So it's been a lot of fun. And if anybody has a dog and is interested in that part of technology, I strongly recommend trying to, you know, begin the conversation with your own pets. Oh, and cats are doing it too. I haven't trained
so
my cats
cool.
to do it.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay, so this one is the one that I think almost anybody who's in a technical field, does any work with computers or networks, probably gets a lot. And it can be tricky. My family keeps asking me to manage their Wi-Fi networks, fix their laptops. What should I do?
It is a tricky one. And it's one that definitely comes often for anybody who is... So much is touches on the tech field. So you know, I try my best as I would either way for my family or for people I care about. So in some cases, you know, I can help. In other cases, I'm the one asking my sister to come help me do stuff. She's a lot more hands-on in terms of IT than I am. And she'd come over and connect a bunch of things and do, you know, troubleshoot, whatever. So I totally relate to people who become the tech support of the extended family and friends. I guess do it if you're able. If you know, first of all, you don't know everything, right? You can fix some things, you can't fix others. You're also not physically always on site with people, and you don't have all the time in the world. So I'd say point people to resources. Also, if your relatives are anything like my mom, they probably need a password reset weekly. Literally, this woman needs a password reset all the time. Get them a password manager and sail into the sunset. This is what I can say. So picking the next question, actually a really good one here. I think this one is an important one. Why do Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion have permission to gather our most personal information without our consent? And then also, why are these three major credit bureaus also allowed to kind of protect our personal data so poorly from cyber attacks?
Whew, okay, you're right. Yeah, that is a big one. All right. So as noted, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, those are the three major credit bureaus here in the United States. There's also a fourth one that people should know about, even though it doesn't get mentioned as often, and that one's Innovis. And the big difference between Innovis and the other three is that it provides credit reports, but not credit scores. But all the agencies, all these credit report bureaus are used by banks and other lenders to try and get a handle on whether or not someone is a good candidate for paying off their loan. So before you get a loan, they do some kind of a check because they want to make sure that you're not going to default, which that's quite reasonable. So most people have the need for some kind of a loan instrument at some point in their lives, whether or not it's a car loan or a mortgage or even a credit card. And the credit report and score that the lenders use can help determine also things like the interest rate that they're going to give you for their loan. So this is some pretty powerful stuff. It can depend on whether or not you're going to be able to get a car or a house, and also how much interest you may pay for that. But the question is, why do they have that data about us? How did they get it? And did we as consumers consent? Well, some of the data that they have is actually public. We may not realize it, but you know, certain data about us, like our mortgages, are public. They go into the public deed records. Where we live can be public. You know, our names. So there's a lot of data that's actually public that we know is personally identifiable, but yet it's out in the public record. And this goes for court data too. So there's something called PACER, which is public access to court electronic records. And these again are court records that can be accessed publicly. So some of the data though that they have, so all that data that's public, they are out there combing the internet and other sources to get access to that data. But there's some data that's tied to your credit history that you may actually have consented to share without knowing it. So some of your PII, some things like SSNs, you may have, as you were applying for a loan or a mortgage or a credit card, you may have in the fine print actually signed off on something that said that lender was going to potentially share your data with the bank, or other third parties. And you know, how many of us read all that really, that fine print, especially if you're super anxious to get a car lease, to get to your job, or you're signing that mortgage, you know, going down all of the fine print may not be top of mind. So it's really this combination of data that is public and data that we may have consented to share with a bank or lender in the process of getting a loan or a credit card. So the
That's
setup,
true.
so the system's really set up to make it hard to function without going into the system. So the question then really becomes, what can we do to improve those the, that protection? Sort of the second part of the question. And luckily, there's awareness, and awareness is, you know, sunlight is the best disinfectant. So having this question out there, having more people aware of it is really helpful. And then also the US government is getting involved. The Government Accountability Office issued a report after the 2017 Equifax breach, identifying how it occurred. So that gives insight into how it could be prevented in the future. And some lawmakers are taking action too. Like Senator Ed Markey introduced the Data Broker Accountability and Transparency Act of 2017. So again, sunlight, the best disinfectant, having people know where their data is, who has it, and then giving them some control over taking it back if they want it back, I think is really one of the best ways to move this forward and hopefully avoid another Equifax level breach at a credit bureau. So I know that was a lot, but you know, thank you. That was a really important question, and hopefully people got some insight out of what's going on with their data.
It is
All
an
right,
important
so now
question.
moving on, we have some folks would like to know what it's like working at a big company in cyber, so a company like IBM or Microsoft working in cybersecurity.
Well, like many things in life, this really depends. I guess it mostly depends on who you are, what you want to do, how you like working, or how you like, how do you function within complex hierarchies that can get quite bureaucratic at times. It really, is a personality thing. I have a lot of friends working for startup companies, and they're at their happiest there, where things are very new. They're building something that was not there before. There's not a lot of people. It's a very intimate team, moves really fast. If they need approvals for something, they probably ask one person and kind of move on with it. And I would say larger companies, those are not always the same. So personally, I do enjoy very much working for large companies like IBM, where there's virtually no limit to the variety of roles and opportunities to do different things over time, which could be a reason for people could stay 20 years at IBM and just evolving over time, doing a bunch of different things and learning things and constantly expanding their abilities. But also, I like the size and the scale where we tackle really complex problems for very, very large companies in the world. And I find that continuously invigorating. So that's something I could say. How about you, Diana? What do you think about that sort of question?
I agree with you. I think a lot of it really depends on the people or the team that you're working with. I've worked at a number of large companies, IBM, Microsoft, Symantec, KPMG, and it always really for me boils down to which team and the people on that team that I'm working with, because there are so many different opportunities at a large company. So you find the people and work with the people that you really enjoy working with. And a large company gives you there are a lot more people to work with, so you can kind of build that team and find that right space for you. I also really, as you mentioned, I love the global reach of the large companies. So these truly international organizations with offices around the globe. So you have the opportunity to visit Taiwan and Singapore and Australia and Brazil and learn about the unique challenges of those geolocations and how cybersecurity is truly a global problem. So I think and a large company that's really you can't get that kind of global reach with the smaller companies. On the other hand, I've also worked at startups and I work with a lot of startups now, and I love that too. So I think as you said, Lamore, it really matters where people want to work and what kind of experience they want to have. But for anyone that's scared of like, oh, I don't think I'll ever fit in at a big company like an IBM or a Microsoft, I would say, take another look, because really large companies, can be very, very modern and a lot of fun to work at. There's some red tape, but they also have a lot of reach and opportunity. So I would say definitely at least once in your life, try working at a big company. And as Lamore said, you might stay there for the bulk of your career.
Yeah.
So speaking of careers, though, Lamour, if you weren't doing cyber, what do you think you'd be doing?
Ew, I would be doing something probably a lot different. My thing would be to take care of abandoned newborns. Like, in some cases and in different parts of the world, even in the United States, newborn babies are sometimes abandoned in hospitals. They're also abandoned outdoors in different places, on doorsteps and creeks. It still happens nowadays. And until homes are found for these infants, and until, something kind of moves in terms of the system, they're in the hospital and somebody needs to hold them, to sing to them, to feed them, and make them feel wanted, make them, hear a heartbeat. So by far and wide, that's something I would be doing. I might even do it after I retire, but that really depends if cybersecurity ever releases its hold on my heart. It's a different, completely different something that I, what I do nowadays. And what about you, Diana? What would you be doing if you weren't in cyber?
Well, it's funny, we're kind of like in some ways kindred spirits on that, because although for me it's dogs. So that's actually when I was in high school and college, interestingly, I never thought I'd work in the corporate world. I thought that when I graduated, what I was going to do was I was going to take care of dogs that needed homes and to write poetry and just spend out the whole day helping shelter dogs and helping pets that needed to exactly what you're talking about be taken care of and shown some love and compassion, and then writing poetry as I was walking with those dogs. So I still think about doing more of that. I do volunteer work now, but I think about spending more time doing that as I get older and maybe even in retirement, potentially opening up a shelter. So it's kind of interesting. I had Ed, that both of us really wanted to go take care of the young that needed some level of parenting. Just mine were not human young. But so
So
this is, I think
nice.
we have time for one more question before we wrap, and this is a sort of a fun one, is do you hack in your spare time?
Well, the answer is no. I do not hack in my spare time, and I don't hack at work. It's just not a thing. I never did, actually. Diane, you did. You probably still have a more of a touching to that.
Well, I would say if we take the negativity out of hack and we look at the old school engineering, definition of it, which is like trying to take things apart to understand how they work, then yes, that's something that I enjoy doing. I don't do a lot of penetration testing anymore, which would be sort of the quote professional side of hacking. I don't do that much anymore, but I actually do still do a little of it, but for work, not in my spare time. What I love doing in my spare time now, which is adjacent, which is puzzles. I love a good puzzle. And if there's an escape room in a city that I'm visiting and I have the time to do it, I will go do that because so I still like trying to figure out how things work, but not so much doing the pen test work as I used to. Well, that was a lot of fun. I really had did you, I had fun doing that, Lamore. Did
Me
you like
too.
that? Yeah, it was really
Absolutely.
fun. So thank you everybody who sent in questions. We're sorry for anybody we didn't get to your questions, but we will do another episode. So and we're going to give you information on how to send in your questions at the end. And I am going to right now do the drawing. Okay. And for our $50 Amazon gift certificate, and our winner is Mark S. So Mark, you will be getting an email about this soon, and your $50 gift certificate will be on its way to you very, very soon.
Yay, Mark. Well, thank you all for being with us today. Please follow the podcast and get involved. Send us more questions. On our next episode, we will have a special guest to talk to us about gaming. So get your family and friends to stay tuned for this one, especially if they have kids, teenagers that play online a lot, or if you yourself play online a lot. We're going to have a guest to talk to us about the risks. You can reach out to us on Twitter at cyber underscore everyday. We're both on LinkedIn if you want to send us some questions in advance. And you can also email us at youreverydaycyber@securitycurve.com. Our podcast page has more details for you and resources that we give in each and every episode. So thank you for everyone for tuning in, and please stay safe out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor and Diana. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.